Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin sent you. Thank you. Hey, everyone, and thank you for joining us, and welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast. We appreciate your support and have a special interview and episode for you today. So sit back, relax, and enjoy learning about sports and opportunities around the world. Here comes the music. I gotta let you go.
He goes, I'll give you $750,000 a year to sign with us.
Without right even now, showing off.
He goes, don't even walk over to the field.
Because I had no idea that my passport was even expired.
Let me tell you, I sent out 6,000 emails.
Gentlemen, how do you use a celebrity for good? You know, up until that point, most of us, as athletes, were taught how to use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, Jay, get me out.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over it.
You finished the game with a broken hand?
Yeah, I finished the game with...
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
There are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey my last season.
Okay. It's just a numbers game. Don't worry, it's just business. These are phrases some of you are very used to hearing, you athletes. Fortunately for me, I'm not athletic enough to hear these. Usually I get the old, we've decided to go a different way, which is the version you get when you're a lot less successful and athletic. But those of you that are athletic have heard that before, probably. It's a numbers game. You know, I wish we could have all of you, but we can't. Or it's just a business. You're playing the sport that you love, sure, but at the end of the day, this is a business. Now, those aren't wrong. Those are absolutely true. But for some of you, those words sting more than others because some of you have heard them a lot. And some of you heard them at just the worst time. And some of you thought there's no way I'm gonna get that again, get that same response. Then maybe you're in training camp or some tryout of some kind. You sit down with a GM, maybe the coach, and you hear those words. You know, we really liked what we saw out there. Unfortunately though, it's just a numbers game. I wish I could keep everybody out on that court, but you know, it's a business. I gotta move on. What do you think? Have you heard that before? Sound a little familiar? I'm betting some of you have heard something very similar to that in the past. Anyway, that brings us on to our guest for this episode. Our guest today, Bo Bell. Now, full disclosure, I heard about Bo Bell, learned about Bo Bell from the A&E docuseries that we've mentioned in a past episode, Fourth and Loud. I mentioned the docuseries Fourth and Loud on episode 36 when we had our special guest JJ Ratterink. Fourth and Loud was an A&E docuseries that took a look at the opening and inaugural season of the LA Kiss of the Arena Football League, I think in 2014. And so we did an episode with JJ, who was the quarterback at the time. Another really important character to that team was Bo Bell, and so that's who you're going to hear from. And so that's at least where I was introduced to the name. I did more research on it. Bo Bell has had quite a past in football. His journey is going to begin, and I'm going to quickly run through it because the rest will be up to him. But he does take a stop, an attempt in the NFL. He's in a football league we haven't talked about yet that you're going to hear. And then he has some significant time in the AFL, including some upper management in the AFL. During that time, he was with the LA Kiss, so we will stop and talk about that a little bit. But he also was high up in management when the AFL finally ceased. So we're going to get a personal view of what that fall was like, what he heard, what was it, you know, from his perspective, all that good stuff. So enough of me. Thank you to our guest, Bo Bell, for taking the time to interview with us. Thank you all for listening and enjoy. But before we do that, there's a couple of reminders I got to give you. First, the social media you can always find Globally Ballin on facebook.com/globallyballin, Instagram at globallyballinofficial, and Twitter at globallyballin. In addition, you can now find us on Patreon at patreon.com/globallyballin. We have a bunch of stuff on there. For as little as $2 a month, there's platforms for you. There, we had a request come in, or just a mention, that the music in the background during the interview was kind of throwing them off a little bit. And so they just suggested maybe revisiting that idea. And so we did. And we're like, wow, that's fair. Let's check into it. And so we asked some of our other listeners and some other people we know. And then we got one of the worst things that could happen was a mix of answers. And so we didn't really gain any ground whatsoever. So instead, what we did is decided to offer an extra opportunity on Patreon. So if the music really keeps you from focusing, there is an option on Patreon. It's the lowest tier that allows you to get all of our interviews. We call them short and sweet. There's no music. There is no ads. It's just cut and dry the way some of you want. And then for those of you that do kind of enjoy the music, soothing, keeps you kind of locked in the conversation, which we've also heard, those will continue to be as they are. We might experiment with some different music in the background, but just keep in mind, if that's you, if the music really throws you off, there is a platform for it. And of course, let us know that that's you, and we can continue to keep that in mind. So go ahead and check that out if you haven't already, but otherwise you can always reach us on those social media links. Continue to keep an eye out for our recent episodes. And finally, if you enjoyed the show, a rating on Apple Podcasts as well as maybe a short review is huge for us. It really is. It helps get the word out. And obviously, I'm a firm believer that this word is a word that needs to get out. So any of those things that you could do, follow us on the social media, maybe a rating, maybe a review, and check out Patreon at least. All of those things would be greatly appreciated. So thank you and enjoy the show. All right. So let's have you introduce who you are and what you did.
Okay. Well, my name is Bo Bell, former fourth round draft pick by the Cleveland Browns in 2008, and played in pretty much every professional football league, CFL, the United Football League, and I finished my career in the Arena Football League.
Okay. And that's not where we'll start, but I will say that's obviously where I found you. I was watching, we just had an episode with JJ, but that's really where this all started. Is I, with all this extra time, I watched Fourth and Loud for the first time, and saw JJ and saw you and saw some of the other guys. I was like, this is interesting, and we need to have this. So brought me to JJ, then brought me to you. So it was we'll talk a little bit about that, but I definitely don't want to gloss over and make it look like that was the only thing you did, because it certainly wasn't. So let's start in the beginning here. You're drafted by the Cleveland Browns out of UNLV, fourth round. At fourth round, are you expected, do you know you're going to get drafted? For people that are picked in the fourth round, are you like, I'm going
to
get drafted?
Well, you hope to get drafted. I mean, you put all that work in.
Sure.
In college, and, you know, it's your dream to get drafted. So you hope you're able to get the opportunity. You really don't know. I've heard stories where guys get calls throughout the whole draft and never get drafted. I heard guys that don't get calls at all, and they get one call, and that was pretty much myself.
Yeah, so you didn't get any call. You just got that one call that says you're coming to Cleveland.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I got that one call, and they said they were going to trade up for me. And, you know, like I said, hearing a bunch of those stories saying, yeah, you know, team's going to call, said they're going to get you here. And then you look, and next thing you know, they don't get you, and they pick somebody else. So when I got that call, I was just like, okay, you know, let me just watch and see what happens. And then I was sitting next to my brothers and everything, and I saw that Cleveland traded, and I said, oh, okay. And then sure enough, name popped up, and then, you know, continued to, you know, everybody got excited around me.
Sure. I'm sure they did.
It was a surreal feeling. Yeah.
So what was the next step? At what point were you off to Cleveland?
Minicamp was in May, I believe. So just a couple weeks after that, I was off to Cleveland, rookie minicamp. And then a week or two after that, it was veteran minicamp or everybody minicamp. And then OTAs, I believe, and then camp. Everything came pretty quick after that.
How long did you end up staying in Cleveland?
Well, I was there for the year. I unfortunately, my rookie year, you know, I tore up my knee a little bit, so I didn't get a chance to play the preseason. However, they kept me around, rehabbed my knee, and played throughout the year on special teams. And at the end of that year, I tore my other knee.
which was
very unfortunate, you know, and, you know, just a little bad luck after that. You know, the coaching staff and the front office got fired. The people that brought me in, new staff comes in, and, you know, just trying to prove myself from then, coming off an injury, and it didn't work out the way I wanted to, ended up getting cut, and been trying to find my way back into the league since then as a player, but learned a lot that first year.
Yeah, I can only imagine. It's just nothing but an uphill battle, fighting injury. You're in your second year, and you have new people upstairs. You know, everything that was going right, you were healthy, and you had people that drafted you, is now gone, and now you're refighting everything you were fighting before.
Yeah, it was, you know, I felt behind the eight ball a little bit. I mean, they drafted a couple guys in my position the same year, and they also brought guys in free agency from where they were at, which, I mean, this is a business, totally understood.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of, you know, as a young player, and they told me this too a while ago, you know, the veterans are like, hey, look, if you're hurt, you know, just get yourself healthy before you even step on the field. Never understood why. I mean, I understood why, you know, but it didn't really sink in until after all of that stuff went down. And essentially, if you're not fully healthy and you're not in the shape that you need to be and get yourself into, and you put yourself out there on the film, on the field, and you get that film on you of, you know, being slow, you know, and they don't know anything about I mean, they could take it. They could take an account that you're injured and stuff, you know, however, but if, you know, as a scout, I can only evaluate what I see. And if you look slow,
yes,
and you look stiff, and you don't look quick, then guess what? That's what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much the reason why I wasn't in the league anymore, which I, you know, as a scout now, I totally understand. I basically do the same thing. I would cut myself.
Yeah, scouts aren't doctors, right? They look to see how you play.
They are evaluators, and that is it. They want to know, will he be able to help our team?
Absolutely.
And at that time, I wasn't going to be able to help any team.
So what's the communication with the family like once you realize you've been waived? Is it, you know, is it something your parents maybe guessed at, or is it just breaking news? Like, you don't want to talk to anybody, I'm sure, but what's that next step after that happens?
Well, I just letting them know, you know, letting my family know what happened, you know, disappointed, you know, and I was more so disappointed myself. Didn't know what the next step was. I trained my whole life and worked my whole life for this opportunity. I did get my bachelor's degree and graduated in physical education sociology, but I wasn't ready to use my degree and just quit football. I mean, I had a burning desire to continue to play football, and talking to other people, you know, they always tell me, you know, you got to go till the wheels fall off. You have to continue to do what you love. I mean, because when it comes down to it, football is a young man's game, and there's going to come a time where you're not going to be able to play anymore. And you don't want to quit too early and look back and say, man, I should have played a couple more years. I know I could have played. And knowing a couple people that did that, you know, and talking to them, they're just like, hey, keep playing as long as you can. As long as you can play, continue to play.
So you move on, and you're going to represent a league we have yet to talk about, and that's the UFL. Give us a little insight on what it was like playing out there in Omaha.
Yeah, so it was very interesting. You know, it was a new league. It came in 2008 when I first got drafted. I believe that was their first year. After second year, after I got released in 2009, after that first year playing in the NFL, I got an opportunity to go to Omaha, where I was the youngest guy there. I just turned 24, and I was the youngest guy there. I had veterans there that I remember growing up watching. You know, I'm playing with Jeff Garcia, you know, Amon Green, Hollis Thomas.
Wow.
You know, I got I got guys, you know, Clinton Hart. I got guys that I remember watching that were much older than me and, you know, just trying to figure my way there and understanding professional football even more, because that was the biggest thing for me, is understanding the profession of it. And, you know, that I guess that was the biggest learning curve for me coming out of college, was being a pro. I had no idea what being a pro was. I thought it was just playing football, getting paid for it. But it's about how you carry yourself. It's about the work you put in, how you're working with others. Everything that every single evaluator and coach and GM is looking for. So still at 24 years old, I'm still learning and developing those skills during that time. Everything I learned my first year in the NFL from the veterans that I had around me, which, to be honest, we weren't a very good team in Cleveland, but I had some great veteran leadership on that team. You know, guys that, you know, showed me how to be a pro, told me how to become a professional, and really led by example. But, you know, going into Omaha, I just tried to do the best I could, learn the playbook and put my best foot forward. You know, however, it didn't work out the way I wanted to, and I got released.
How smooth was the year? I know they closed up shop in 2012, I think. Yeah, 2012, and you were there in 2010. Was it everything, as far as league goes, fairly smooth, did it seem?
Well, the league itself, I was released after that first game, you know, so they were bringing some more veterans in from the NFL.
Okay.
So I was released around that point. But just from the inside with training camp and everything was ran pretty smooth. I mean, it was professionally ran. I think the toughest part with professional football leagues are the monetary standpoint. You spend a lot of money, whether it's the insurance, the facilities, player salaries, the coach salaries, front office. You know, it's a lot of money that goes into it.
So moving on from Omaha, you go on to, LA or Las Vegas?
No, I was in Spokane first.
Okay. So you go straight to the Shock?
Yeah, go straight to the Shock.
And this was, let's see, 2011.
Yep.
At that point, were arena teams calling for you, or were you making your way as a player, going out to tryouts and that kind of thing?
Well, it's during that time, I didn't know if I was going to play football again. I mean, I just got, within the past 2 years, I just got released from the NFL. I mean, that was definitely crushing to me, because I put everything, my heart, my soul, into playing, getting to my dreams and being there for a year and learning as much as I did, and it just going away and not and getting cut. I didn't know what was going to go on. I continued to fight to get another opportunity. So after that time, I actually, to be honest, I was going on to tryouts all over the place for the UFL.
Okay.
So before I even went to Omaha, I was flying all over the country just to go to tryouts for every single, you know, UFL team, from New York to Florida, Texas to Chicago, Seattle. I was going everywhere just to get in front of people, because I know it was about being able to get seen. The more people that could see you, the better. And it worked out for me by being able to get the opportunity in Omaha. Unfortunately, I got released again there. And after that, I kind of went to a little depression, because I'm like, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. So, you know, it was really tough time for me at that time. And I actually spoke with somebody that got me in contact with the general manager, Ryan Rigmaiden, at the time, who is the general manager for the Spokane Shock.
Okay.
And I remember one of my buddies, you know, real good friend of mine who's no longer with us, Jeremy Gathers, he played for the Spokane Shock that year. So I called him and asked him about, you know, Spokane and Arena Football League. And, you know, he told me, he's like, "Oh, this is going to be the most fun you have in your life."
Really?
And I started laughing at him. Yeah, I started laughing at him, like, "Yeah, right, man." I was like, "Man, I don't know anything about arena football, man. I thought their linebackers got to be like 270, 280. He's like, "Yeah, most of them are." He's like, but you will love this. He's like, "You're going to love it up here." I'm like, "All right." So after speaking with Ryan Rigmaiden, you know, he gave me opportunity to, you know, come up there and come to training camp, which was at the time was in February of 2011. So I go up there to Spokane, and I actually, I thought I was doing pretty good, and I ended up getting cut.
Really?
Yeah, it was kind of funny because I didn't know anything about arena football.
Yeah.
I was playing defensive end. I was playing the Jack linebacker. I was playing Mac. And, you know, just pretty much learning the game of arena football. I've seen it before, you know, growing up. You know, we had the Anaheim Predators where I'm from.
Okay.
And I used to go to those games a couple times. And then I've been to a couple of LA Avenger games too. So going there, I knew a little bit about it, but I didn't know too much. So I was at Mac linebacker. They said, hey, just beat the guy in front of you. I'm like, okay, cool. So I used quickness the whole time because the dude that was blocking me was an offensive lineman, and I knew he couldn't really move his feet. Mm. So I just used quickness and just jump swim and do all type of moves, knock his hands down, get around him and stuff. And unfortunately, that's not what they wanted. They wanted somebody to press the pocket. And I got released after that. And since they told me, they're like, hey, you know, we wanted somebody to press the pocket a little bit more. And I'm like, oh, okay. Shoot, I wish I would have known that. I would have showed some more power.
Yeah.
You know? So fortunately for me, once they released me, like a day and a half later, pretty much, they say, hey, you can come back and be on a two-a-day workout. So essentially, I'm still in training camp with them, but I'm just not signed to a contract. So when I go back to practice, what do you think I did? I was running through people.
Absolutely.
Because they expected me to start jumping around and doing that stuff, but they told me what they needed to see from me, so I decided to show that, hey, I can give some power too.
Sure.
And I think that was what solidified myself with the team there in Spokane, and I made that team and got to play that year, which was a great experience.
So were you there the whole year?
I was there the whole year.
Okay. And how did that season go for the Shock?
We went to the semifinals, played against the Arizona Rattlers.
And ooh, that was top
Arizona
tier.
Oh man, Arizona, that whole Western division was a gauntlet because we had us, we had the San Jose Sabercats, we had the Arizona Rattlers, and we had the Utah Blaze. And we used to just beat up on each other, all of us. That was still one of those teams, you know, were top tier team. Any one of those teams could have went out of the Western division and won championships.
Yeah.
You know? But my first year was just pretty much learning year. I mean, I played all special teams. That was the one thing I fell in love with in arena football was special teams, running down on kickoff.
Oh, really?
Dropping back on kickoff return. Yeah, because when I ran down on kickoff in arena football, that was the closest thing to actually playing outdoor linebacker to me. You know, just because I was able to, you know, they usually have, I call it the triangle. They have four guys up, two guys back, and then you have a middleman, you have a returner and an up back. So there was, I just read the triangle. I'd run down and I'd just read the triangle of the guys on each side, and I'd know who's blocking me within the first 10 yards that I'm running down, and I'd just beat the block and make a tackle.
Nice.
You know, but that was the most freeing thing to me when I was able to just run down on kickoff and just, you know, headhunt. Because I knew who was blocking. It was pretty much one-on-one blocking the whole time. Sometimes they'll double team you.
You know, all your other linebacker blood must have just been gone. I mean, you don't get to use it nearly as much when they put you on the line.
Yeah, I really became a pass rush specialist when I got into the Arena Football League. I developed into a very good pass rusher. And I always told myself, I'm like, man, if, you know, and at the time, you know, in those early years, I was trying to get myself back into the NFL, trying to get film, because that's what they said. You need film. However, you know, I spoke to some scouts and they're like, look, Bo, I cannot evaluate a linebacker in this league, you know, which was kind of crushing to me again. So the only thing I could try to do was try to get back into the United Football League and try to get back into the CFL.
Mm. What you do, right? About 2012, you're up in playing in the Canadian Football League.
So it's funny because after my first year in Spokane, that summer, because you know the season went from February all the way till like June, July.
Yeah, it was that spring-ish.
Yeah, it's in the spring. So directly after that year, I got an opportunity to come back into United Football League with Las Vegas Locomotives. So after coming from the Arena Football League into the UFL again, I feel like I had one of the best camps that I've had in a long time. because the Arena Football League was so quick. Everything happened so fast that you had to get off blocks faster. You had to move quicker because it was so condensed, you know? And when I got out, when I got outdoors, everything was moving so slow to me, you know? So I was able to showcase some things. Yeah, oh my gosh, I was able to showcase some stuff that surprised me.
Yeah.
I was just like, whoa, whoa, that was me? I remember the coach was like, well, who's this? Like, Bell, good job. I'm like, oh, that was me? Like, I didn't know that was me. But, you know, because everything was moving so slow and I was reacting so fast, and I was shooting gaps and I was doing different things to be able to, you know, pass rushing to get attention, you know. However, you know, at the end of that training camp, you know, it was a numbers game. And at the time, you know, I've heard that. That was like the second time I heard that, because Omaha told me the same thing. Oh, it's just a numbers game, you know, yada, yada, yada. We wanted more defensive linemen than linebackers, or we needed to bring another corner in, so we got to get rid of a linebacker, and you were it. And at first, I'm just like, man, I don't want to hear that. Mm. The heck, you know? Like, man, I don't care about numbers. Like, if you think I can play, then why am I not here, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't understand that until later on. However, you know, after that season, I started working, you know, at LA Fitness, started selling training memberships there. And then I got a call from Ryan Rignaden, who was the general manager still up there in Spokane, but he was also helping the BC Lions out. And they gave me a contract to play for them. I signed the contract right away, no hesitation, because I knew I wanted to play football still. And I was excited to go up there to Canada. I was like, shoot, I love, you know.
Yeah.
I get to play professional football. And Canada has been a league that's been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. I would love to have had a career up there, you know. And then it's funny because I realized the moment that I signed with Canada, I couldn't sign with Arena Football. So I was stuck. So Arena Football started up again in 2012. And I was at home, you know, working a regular job, waiting for Canada to call me up. And essentially Canada's training camp wasn't until around this time, May, you know? So I'm like, man, I can't believe I'm not playing football right now. It felt kind of weird, you know?
So you had finished with Spokane before, while waiting for, and then hoping to go to Canada, or is this after Canada the first time? This is after Spokane.
Well, I finished with Spokane.
Yeah.
And my first year with Spokane, I finished with them. And I finished with the Locomotives. And directly after that, I signed with Canada.
Yeah. Okay.
And going into the spring of 2012, that is when I actually was still signed to Canada. But that's when the Arena Football started playing.
Mm, your body's saying it's time to play football right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting there working at LA Fitness. And, you know, Canada actually had their mini camp in L.A., and they said, hey, come out. You know, we want to see you at the mini camp. So come to the mini camp. And to be honest, I ran my fastest 40 I ever ran in my life, which is a 4.85. I've never been a 40. I've never been a guy to just get out the blocks and run a 40. But I always had, you know, I was one of those guys that actually played with game speed. And when I say game speed, it just means that I was able to diagnose things quick and get on the move and get to somebody quicker than if I was just in a standstill. So I run a fast 40 there, and then, you know, essentially I get a call from Ryan Rigmaiden a week later, says, hey, you know, they're releasing you out of your contract. And I'm just like, what? What'd I do? I'm like, what'd I do? They're like, man, they thought you were faster than what you were. And I'm just like, wow. Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? And the funny part about it is this, is that the next week, they went to Las Vegas, right? And they had a mini camp in Las Vegas. And my younger brother actually went to the mini camp. And he ran a 4.65.
Is this the brother that I should know from watching the documentary?
Yes.
Okay.
Him.
Okay.
BJ. All right.
Yeah. And so he ran. Okay.
Yeah. He ran a way faster 40 than I did. I mean, a way faster 40. And they were kind of flat. They were like, how's your younger brother run faster than you? I'm like, hey, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you
know? What is?
What can I do?
One of them's got to run faster than the other.
Exactly. And it was him, which was fine with me. And I was hoping they were going to sign him, to be honest. I was hoping they're going to sign him. I'm like, cool, sign him. I'm like, you know, he wants to play football too. let him, you know, I know he'd love to be a part of it. But they don't sign him. Fortunately for me, Ryan Rigman is like, hey, look, we still want you back up here in Spokane. I was like, okay, cool. So I head back to Spokane in 2012. And my first game back, I played the San Jose Sabercats on NFL Network. And, I mean, I make a big splash. Like, I pretty much every tackle that I make was inside the five-yard line, which for arena football, that's what you want every single time. Mm. Pinning them back, making them work the whole field, sacks, tackles for loss, things like that. I was really showing myself on the NFL Network. And national TV for me is, you know, there's somebody watching. Every time I stepped on the football field, there was somebody new always watching. So I had to show them who I am as a football player. You know?
And that's one of the things. Anyone younger who will listen to this or listen to any of the arena football ones we did, they probably don't realize that arena football was on, depending on the game, primetime. I mean, they had some really good air spots. So if you were doing well, people were seeing you. So it was conceivable that you can make a decent jump from arena football to somewhere else. And so good plays during a game meant a lot for arena football.
Right, right. And when it comes down to it, for somebody to leave the arena football league and get to the NFL, you have to be the top in your position.
Yeah.
I mean, but the disparity of the number one and number two has to be there as well. So essentially, if you're a cornerback and the number two guy has 10 interceptions, you got to have like 18 interceptions for somebody to look at you.
Mm. Big jump between you one and two.
Yes, you have to have that type of those type of numbers to be able to get that opportunity. Or, you know, somebody really to take a take a look at you and do something just spectacular. You know, you gotta do some spectacular stuff. Is I always said it's easier for, you know, wide receivers, offensive linemen, you know, at times, and some defensive linemen to get opportunities, but the jack linebacker, the Mac linebacker, the fullback, you know, it's a little difficult to get an opportunity in the NFL. You know, CFL is you'll be able to get opportunities there a little bit more too, because the game is similar, because you're still covering motion guys as a defensive back, and as a wide receiver, you're coming in motion, you know? But I just went around that whole topic to say, after that first game I came back, I got called into the general manager's office and I got the contract back with the CFL.
So that was then the CFL league in 2012, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And so you're there. Do you make it through the season? Do you finish the season?
Okay. Nope. Which was very unfortunate. And at this time, I've been cut already about 3 or 4 times. And I was just like, are you kidding me?
See, this
I started laughing.
Yeah, well, this is where, like, people listening might hear me hesitating and asking these questions, because sometimes they're often used to the guys that get the 5-year contract and you know where they are. But a lot of you guys that are grinding hard, it's confusing for some of us to try to figure out where you were, because these seasons line up at different times and then you don't last the whole season sometimes. So, you know, for anyone listening, it's confusing for us because we got to figure out where they were. So, all right. You don't make it the whole time in the CFL. What happens there?
So there, to be honest, I feel like I had the best camp I ever had. I'm having interceptions. I'm having forced fumbles. I'm making plays in the backfield. I'm pass rushing. I'm doing everything possible. Mm. And, you know, after the second preseason game, goodbye. Try to get an explanation. The head coach didn't even know I got cut. That was the crazy part about it to me.
Really?
And I was just like, oh, well, hey, what can you do? I mean, this is part of the business. And I'm still, I guess I got to continue to keep learning what's going on. So I made it a point to continue to figure out the different facets of the business, and I looked at myself like, hey, maybe I'm just not that good, you know, maybe I'm not that player that I thought I was, you know, but my confidence never wavered at all. I know who I was as a football player, and if they didn't want me, then somebody else would, and at that point, I just pretty much told myself, I said, look, if you're going to be in the Arena Football League, you're going to be the best linebacker there, plain and simple. Don't worry about going anywhere else or doing anything else. Just be the best football player in the Arena Football League. So I ended up going back to Spokane in 2013, having one of my best years there. And essentially, I actually got I of course, I had to start looking for, what am I going to do after football?
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call from a coach in California, a junior college, Santa Ana College, to ask me, and he asked me if I wanted to coach. And I was like, sure, I'd love to. And I ended up going back to Orange County, where I'm from, Santa Ana. And I started coaching at Santa Ana College. And just ironically, the LA Kiss came about.
Yes. All right, so...
And I ended up in LA.
Yeah, that does bring us to the LA Kiss here.
This episode is also brought to you by our friends over at Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Louisville, Texas, brought to you by Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to bring success to the lives of young men in ways in which they may have not reached that success otherwise. One of the ways in which they do this is through their professional basketball team, the Louisville Yellow Jackets, who play in TBL or the Basketball League. Make sure you go check out Creating Young Minds on all major platforms, including Facebook and LinkedIn. I encourage you to dive more into the mission of Creating Young Minds as they strive to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. Thank you.
Yeah, that does bring us to the LA Kiss here, which for anybody, again, if you're not aware, we did the episode with the quarterback during this season, or at least one of them, for the documentary Fourth and Loud, put out by AMC following the 2014 season of the LA Kiss, which Bo just said he was a part of that team. And I was going to ask you, you become a big part of the storyline. I mean, you're at least one of the characters that's in there a lot, or players that's in there a lot. I always wondered, do you know that? I mean, there were like four or five guys that they talk with a lot.
Yeah.
Why did they pick you, or did they say, like, hey, we're going to be talking to you a lot, or did it just kind of happen that way?
Essentially, because I was pretty much one of the guys, the first guys that signed there, because I was from there, I was just like, hey, I'm going to be here. And then they told me about the docuseries, and they said, hey, we'd love to, you know, sit down with you and,
okay,
you know, get your story a little bit more. And I was like, sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect, to be honest. And I'm kind of shy when it comes to just putting myself out there like that.
Yeah.
But this is a leap of faith. I decided to say, you know, if I'm going to be here, let me just go ahead and take that leap of faith and do this.
Well, I wanted to kind of field some of the questions that we asked JJ and just kind of compare them with what you thought. And at least from watching it, one of the complaints from some of the players was that it was really distracting the way they had it set up. The Kiss had it set up. Obviously, it's an entertainment. They're trying to bring people in, sell tickets, that kind of thing. Did you see any sort of distracting element while playing?
The biggest distractions for me personally was when they didn't have the stuff set up in time. So guys will come onto the field early so they can get their warm-ups in, but they're not able to get their warm-ups in because the nets aren't down, or excuse me, the nets aren't up. You know, they're still working on the halftime stuff, and I'm just like, hey, this got to be off the field right now.
Mm.
Guys on my team, as well as the opponents, we need to start warming up and getting prepared for this game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it came to the cameras and everything, I don't think it was that much of a distraction, just because they were there. We all knew they were there. We understood they were going to be there. But that was the biggest distraction to me, is when the stuff wasn't set up, the game, for everybody to get in their individual routine.
One of the things that I had no idea about, I was a little miffed that they didn't talk about it more until you brought it up at the very end, where they were kind of asking you what you would like to see change or what you didn't like. And you were talking about how the workout, I think it was the workout situation, or at least the gym or whatever, there was some sort of promise that was not met. And I remember thinking, I heard nothing about this in the 10 episode series. I heard nobody say anything about any sort of workout room problem or athletic facility.
Yeah, so the organization itself, I mean, when I look at organizations, they're all ran from the top down. If you have good ownership,
yeah,
you're going to have a good president, you're going to have good general manager, you're going to have a good head coach, and you're going to have good assistant coaches and great players. And then everything's going to work perfect in that, right?
Yeah.
So the ownership, Gene and Paul, they were great. Gene and Paul, great guys, man. You know, they just didn't know anything about football.
Which they said several times in the, at least,
yeah, openly, several times. Exactly. They were businessmen. They were, you know, rock stars. when it comes on to putting a production on, they know exactly what to do.
Hmm.
You know, so they trusted somebody else when it came down to the football stuff, the football side. It was, this actually was this. This is the biggest, we practice out of college where every single morning we go down there to the locker room. We pass by a beautiful, that was dark. We pass by a training room that was dark, and we go to the locker room. We had to come out the locker room to go to the field to get tape. Sometimes we might have ice bags. Sometimes we might have ice baths. But they had everything you needed right there. And the best and true professional organizations, everything is centrally located, you know? So for us, we had to drive everywhere. You know, it took about 20 minutes, 30 minutes just to get to the practice field. And then we had to drive back home to our apartments to go. And they had a weight room, you know, but it wasn't like a weight room. That's all it was.
Okay.
It wasn't a training facility, anything like that. It was a weight room. It was very makeshift put together. Not the weight room itself, but just everything that we did there was makeshift and put together. Nothing was centrally located. It was just frustrating for me.
Yeah.
And that was probably the frustrating part. I mean, in the beginning, we didn't even have helmets for half the guys that were on the team.
Yeah, they talked.
We didn't have pads.
I know that. And they did. They cited the reason that maybe it was because they tried to get everything going a little too fast as far as an organization, which I have no idea. But yeah, they definitely said that. They mentioned that. I thought that seems crazy.
I mean, when it comes down to it, it was just ran terribly. The person in charge that was supposed to do all this, I mean, the thing was this, and this is what really got me. This is what got me kind of frustrated, was the fact that where I was coaching at San Antonio College, I spoke with my head coach there, and they asked me in January or February, said, "Hey, is there anywhere we can practice?" I said, "You guys don't have a practice field already? Like, that's the number one thing you're supposed to do. The moment that you have a team is to find a practice field and the facilities for the players to work out and, you know, train from." Didn't have it. So I brought my head coach in and I asked him, "Hey, is there any way we can be able to use this here at our junior college?" And I wasn't in the meeting myself, but from what I was told by my head coach, that the person in charge did not want to pay any money to give us the accommodations that we needed, where we could have had a training room, we could have had a weight room, we would have had a locker room, everything, and we would have had a classroom that we could have used.
When you were in LA, when you were at the KISS?
Yeah. So they wanted to trade and barter everything out, which is definitely understandable. That's, when it comes down to it, arena football, that's the lifeblood of the Arena Football League. You know, a lot of it is trade and barter for different opportunities for advertisement and promotional resources they can use, you know. However, we decided to go with a place where we can only use the field, and then we got kicked off the field later in the year.
Yeah.
So we had nowhere to practice, or we could only practice for like 45 minutes, and then we had a locker room with no showers in it, you know, and oh my gosh, thinking about it now, it was a headache. I did not want to be a part of that anymore.
Because in the end, they pull in a lot of the guys that they're at least hoping come back, and you were definitely one of them. And without looking at the roster for the next year, I had a pretty good idea how you were feeling about coming back for the next year.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't want to come back because I wanted to win. And you don't win like that. That's not how you win.
No, it's certainly, I mean, and to be a professional, I mean, you're hiring people to play professional football.
Exactly.
It's kind of hard to use that label when you don't have a practice.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, Spokane was very professional. They had a whole indoor facility. They had an indoor facility. They had a weight room. They had a locker room. They had a training room. And we had meeting rooms upstairs. And then at times we'd meet like the defensive and offensive line. We'd meet in the weight room with TV there, with chairs set up, which wasn't bad, you know?
Yeah.
It was still a meeting area that we had. And then upstairs they had their business office. They had their sponsorship and ticket sales. You know, so they had every single thing in one. You know, everything was centrally located. Where in LA, they had all their professional offices in a very nice building in right next to the stadium, next to the Honda Center, right? And yeah, they had a very nice, you know, business office right down the street from where we played our games, but our apartments were about a good 30 minutes away from there. And then from our apartments, our practice field was another 30 minutes away from there. And our food that, you know, the food deals that we're able to have were scattered out throughout the whole metropolitan of Los Angeles and Orange County. So guys weren't eating, you know, they have to pay out their pocket, which wasn't bad, but at the same time, you know, most teams in the Arena Football League, everything was centrally located and everything was either catered to them or they'd go to a certain place on certain days. Not having a training room and a weight room to use regularly, it affected the coaches, it affected the players, it affected the rest of the staff, you know. So when those type of issues affect everybody, then people aren't going to be very happy.
So what? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, you could see it with Bob McMillan.
Yeah, that was right? Going to be one of my follow-ups here.
Like, Bob is a great coach, man. Bob is a great coach. He's a great man. And it was just so – I could see the frustration, and he was so – every single day was hard to deal with that type of stuff. And he's coaching the team, and, you know, so it's – I can only imagine what he was going through. And of course, after the show comes out, it doesn't look good for him at times, just because he's so frustrated. What is he supposed to do? You know.
So that's what I was going to ask. As a player, could you? A lot of what happens in the docuseries is focused around Bob buttonheads or management buttonheads with Bob, but either Bob buttonheads with management or management buttonheads with Bob. Either way, they're buttonheads a lot, and could you feel that? Could you see it? Would you see it with Brett and Bob, or was it something you felt, or was it a combination of both?
Oh, you could see it at times, and you feel it. I think that when Brett tries to intervene and I don't know the situation because I wasn't sure. In it. I wasn't
absolutely
in those coaches meetings, yep, or anything like that, but I could tell that Bob was frustrated.
Yep.
I just try to stay in my lane as much as possible as be a player. Mm-hmm. And try to be the best player out there and try to be a leader and help other guys out. But, you know, you could tell the coaching staff was very frustrated with what was going on.
And, you know, even, you know, you're not sticking your head in the meetings, but even to have a coach, if you can feel it through your coach, that's probably not a good thing when it comes to the line of success. Okay. So other than that, outside of the documentary and all that other stuff, what was your general feeling while playing for LA? How did it go? And for people who don't know.
I mean, personally, it went very well for me.
Yeah.
And because I was, this is the thing, because I was from the area, I literally, where we played at, I grew up 5 minutes down the road. And I had a coaching job there at Santa Ana College. So I had a job there. I knew the area. So for me, it wasn't that bad. The only bad part about it was the facilities and the lack of resources that we had as professional athletes. And I was mad for my teammates. These are guys that left their homes from the East Coast, from the South, from the Midwest, from Northwest, from all over the place to come play here. And we don't have the resources for them to be professional athletes, to take care of their body. Because a lot of these guys wanted to continue to play professional football in the NFL. A lot of them had opportunities. However, they didn't have the resources to be able to take care of their bodies. So when those calls came, they were ready to go. I mean, even you look at the trainers. The trainers were working out of apartment. The equipment manager, my guy Daryl McGee, he was working out of a truck, a Penske truck. Every day I saw him, he was working, moving stuff from one place to another. He had to move every single thing. So this is the thing that people don't understand is, like, when we didn't have a practice field at times and when the place didn't want us to be there or wherever else we were at, he had to pack everything up. One guy, maybe two guys, and with the trainer, had to pack every single thing up, put it in that truck, and drive somewhere else, unload it, pack it again, go somewhere else, unload it, pack it, you know, and that right there, you couldn't pay somebody enough money to do that.
All right, so you go on to Philadelphia after this. Is this a you choice, or did Philly come calling for you? Did you feel that out? What was kind of the play? Because obviously you wanted to kind of leave, but you can't just not have a job.
So my whole time, I've been on the West Coast playing for Spokane and playing for L.A. And Arizona Rattlers were a juggernaut the whole time, you know?
Yes.
And L.A., I love being back home, but I was just like, oh, my gosh, I got to get out of here. And I want to win. I'm tired of losing. You know, I want to win.
Yeah, they did lose a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wanted to win and I want to be part of a winning organization. So I looked around the league and I was just like, where can I go where I know they have that winning culture? They want to win and I might be able to make an impact. So, you know, when I became a free agent, you know what? Let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
So, when I signed with LA, first of all, I had contract issues. And essentially what the contract issue was this, was saying I told them I was going to stay there for 2 years, right? So when I initially spoke to Bretton and Skyler, I was like, hey, look, you know, I'm from here. I'll stay here for 2 years. And they're like, okay, great. So I had a little, you know, I told them I was going to stay there for 2 years. I put a little promissory note. I'll be here for 2 years. But when it came down to sign to my contract, I said, and they didn't have the resources. They didn't have a practice field. They didn't have anything. I was like, you know what? I'm signing a 1 year deal. So they kind of got frustrated with me with that. I'm like, you can't get frustrated with me. Like, you guys don't even have everything together. So essentially they were trying to lock me into that 2 years that I said I was going to stay. And I went to the league after the season in 2014, I had one of my best years. I had 14 sacks and, you know, I mean, I had a great year. So I finally got the recognition that, you know, that I felt like I deserved at the time, you know, became first team all arena and, you know, ended the season. Although I ended up getting injured, I tore a muscle in my hip and we were way out of playoff contention anyways. And I was so frustrated. I was just like, I just want to win. If I'm going to continue to play football, I want to win and I want to be part of an organization that is professionally ran. So looking around the whole Arena Football League at the time when we had like 14 teams, I said, Philadelphia has great ownership. They have a great coach. They have a great quarterback. I was like, they like to win over there.
Was Bon Jovi there when you were there?
No, Ron Jaworski.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, Jaws. So Jaws was the owner over there along with Cosmo DiNicola. There was a bunch of people over there too, you know. Craig Spencer, you know, Marcus Colston was the owner, Jari Evans. There were a bunch of good people there that believed in the organization. So essentially what happened was, and Bob told me, you know, once that contract stuff came out, Bob told me, he said, look, Bo, you know, if you don't want to be here, I won't hold you. So I told him at the end of the year, said, Bob, can you trade me to Philadelphia? So essentially, they traded me to Philadelphia for Derrick Ross, who was, at the time, the leading rusher in arena football history.
Wow. So just straight up?
Yeah, so straight trade, one for one. So I ended up going to Philadelphia, and it was everything that I imagined. Professional, from the top down, from ownership to the president, to the coaches, to the players, everything. You know, and when it came down to it for me, their facilities were A1. I mean, everything was centrally located. I walk into the facility. I have the weight room there. I have the practice field there. I have a locker room. I have a shower. We have meeting rooms. We have our training room there with a hot tub in it. All of our meal places were around where we lived. We didn't have to drive 40 minutes just to go eat anywhere.
It really is. That's huge. Being all centrally located makes a massive difference.
A massive difference because you don't have to worry about too much stuff.
Yeah.
The apartments were nice. Nice apartments. The furniture was nice. I mean, it made a huge difference. So when I went there, I was so happy. I was so happy.
Was Clint Nozell the coach at the time?
Yes, he was.
All right. That's what I thought. He was actually, he was quarterback from our local-ish team here in Michigan. That's how I know the
Grand
name.
Rapids?
Yeah. That's how I recognize the name.
Yeah. Winning championships over there, too, as a player. He's a Hall of Fame player and coach.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Yeah, man.
All right, so you go play in Philly. How does that first season go for you?
Man, you know what? The first season for me, I hurt my back in training camp.
Oh.
And I never felt this pain before in my back. I never, like, it was like a stinger all the way down my leg.
Ooh.
So I was messed up. So that first season there, I was messed up. And I was very upset with myself because I'm just like, damn, I didn't come out here to be, you know, to be broken, you know.
Of course not.
They're expecting me to be the guy that they saw on film, you know, and I come here and I get hurt. And I actually played that year, and we end up going to, like, the semifinals, and we lose to, I believe it was Jacksonville.
Okay.
So
let's see, yeah.
So that was 2015. We lose to Jacksonville. We had a good team.
Then you're there. What year did you say that was? 14?
That was 2015.
15. Okay, because you're there from 15, 16, and 17.
Yep.
Okay. Now, 16, tide changed 16. A little bit.
Yes.
Just a little bit.
So, I'm healthy pretty much that year, except for for one incident. You know, my nose guard fell into my leg, and I tore my MCL, so I was out for like 6-7 weeks. But I was part of a great team and a great organization. I mean, the thing about arena football that people don't understand is it's a quick game, you know, and I learned so much from Coach Dalzell and, you know, my coach, Phil Bogle, just about the game, about professionalism, about everything. You know, I was around a bunch of great guys. I couldn't have asked for a better situation to be in, you know?
Yeah.
And essentially, you know, we end up winning the championship that year. I come back the last 5 games and we rattle off and we ended up beating Arizona in the championship.
Big win.
Big win. We win our first Arena Bowl since 2004, I believe, for Philadelphia.
And that, let's see, where was that?
That was in Arizona.
Was it in Arizona? Okay.
Yeah, it was in Glendale.
I mean, and they packed. Philadelphia, you guys packed it pretty well too, didn't you? But
yeah.
Arizona definitely did as well. So to win an Arena Bowl in front of an Arizona crowd, I'm sure was a lot of fun.
I never even won in Arizona. Playing for Spokane, playing LA. I beat Arizona. I beat them, but only when I was in Spokane a couple times. That was my first Arena Bowl appearance and my first Arena Bowl win. And it was in Arizona in front of a huge crowd on ESPN. Man. And, I mean, everything came together. Our guys, man, from our offense to our defense to our special teams, everybody played together. You know, our coach... best coach, him and Kevin Guy are some of the best coaches out there, you know, or the best coaches in the Arena Football League. And they got to face off in the Arena Bowl, and we came out on top. And essentially, it's all about possessions. Arena Football League is a possession game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people don't understand about Arena, why it's so great, because it's a possession game. And when you have the ball last before half, and at the end of the game, that's usually the team that wins. And the team that doesn't turn over the ball.
Yeah, that's the other thing. If a defense can come up, if you got a defense who can come up with some shocker turnovers, that's going to change it.
Yeah, you got to think, like, because it's a possession game, if you can get turnovers and turnovers on down, because you're going for it on fourth down pretty much every time.
Yeah.
50-yard field. So if you have a good quarterback, essentially you should score every single time you have the ball in your hand. Right, which we had a great quarterback in Dan Rattaball. And every single time we had the ball in our hands, we knew we were going to score. So it was up to us on defense to get one or two stops per game. Because if we get one or two stops per game, we win that game. And make sure that we recover every single onside kick.
Yeah, because any chance you can to throw off those possessions is going to be an absolute game changer.
Right.
Okay, so you win in 2016.
Yep.
And then how does 17 go? One more year there.
So 2017, come back, and they restructured the league. So a lot of teams dropped out. Arizona dropped out because they were pretty much going to be the only team on the West Coast. And it went from like 13 teams to pretty much 6, I believe.
Yeah, this is when we kind of see the shift or the handwriting on the wall here for AFL, isn't it?
Right.
Okay, so you go and there's six teams essentially left and you beat Tampa Bay.
Yep.
Right? In Arena Bowl 30 here. How does that go? Is it, can you feel the difference in, I don't know, intensity in the league at all? Or is it more, again, looking back on it?
Well, you can see it. It's unwavering as well. I mean, when you drop down to six, you don't know what's going to go on.
Yeah.
And then when we played Tampa Bay was one of the best teams in the league at the time. So we knew when we played them, like, okay, you know, it's going to be a good game. Going into that game, I'll never forget, because it was back and forth. And right before halftime, we throw an interception and Dan gets hurt, his knee, you know, they hit his knee. And we're sitting there like, oh, damn, like, they just took our quarterback out and he threw a pick. So that on their sideline, they're freaking hyped. They're ecstatic.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They're like, geez, we have just taken out their best weapon and we're up on them going into halftime.
Yeah.
Right? And the feeling coming into the locker room, looking at everybody, none of us were even worried. Like, it was one of the best feelings in the world, because we're looking, and I remember talking to DBs, I said, hey, let's go get it. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're good. Let's go.
That's a well-coached team right there. If you can go in that situation and nobody's worried, that's a well-coached team.
We weren't worried, and then towards the end, Dan comes out the training room, and he's like, let's go win this thing. I'm like, let's go.
Right behind you. Oh, yeah. That's got to be a good feeling. You're already confident, and then he comes back, and you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, we got this.
Yeah. So we come back, and, you know, we got the ball coming out of half, and we scored to tie the game, and then it's back and forth, and I believe we got a turnover, and that was it. And they had to really pretty much hustle to try to score at the last second, which they didn't get, and we won.
And so, so you're done. You went, it's in Philly. Okay, so you won a home. What happens after this? So you're done after this season. Now, Philadelphia keeps playing, right? They keep going on.
Right. So
what does your career turn into?
So it was kind of interesting, because that year in 2017, I had my best year. You know, mm-hmm. I got Defensive Player of the Year. I got another Commissioner Award. I won the championship. So my mindset was, I've done everything I needed to do in professional football. Everything that I ever wanted to do. Win championships and show people that I'm the best at what I do, I've done it. And I was trying to figure out what the next step was for me. Fortunately, I was able to work with our ownership with Ron Jaworski, and he gave me a job to assist him in his analytics at the NFL NFL Films, where he was an analyst for ESPN.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was learning more about, you know, the other side of the business for football throughout the time. And then I was also taking classes in the Scouting Academy, because at that time I realized, you know, becoming a scout is what I really wanted to do. I love to coach. You know, coaching is a joy. You know, be able to help young men and teach them the game and life through the game of football. However, to be able to evaluate players and see how their talent would be able to fit with the team and the organization that you work with. I was just like, man, that's the job that I want. How do I get that job? You know, what are the next steps that I take to be able to become a scout? You know, so I started looking into that aspect, and I saw that they had the Scouting Academy, which I started doing that when I was still playing in 2016. And then 2017, I continued in it. And at the end of the year in 2017, after we won, my coach, Vogel, our general manager, he asked me if I'd want to coach. And I was like, sure. And he told me that Rob Keefe, who is another great coach, who was my coach my rookie year in Spokane, he was the one that was going to become the head coach for a new organization in Albany. and I ended up taking that. And so I spoke to Coach Keith, and he gave me the opportunity to coach up there in Albany, along with Coach Les Moss, who was another great coach. So we had two great head coaches on our staff in Albany, and we were able to put together a great team. And, you know, they gave me the opportunity to be the director of player personnel up there as well. So my job was essentially finding all the players, reaching out to the to agents, trying to get more players up here so we can get them tryouts and play with us and sign players. And, you know, got an opportunity to look on the personnel side.
So you...
And that's when I really wanted to do it. That's when I was just like, I definitely want to do this.
So Albany does well, and then you end up going back to Philly to be general manager, right?
Right. So while I was the director of player personnel and the assistant defensive line coach, my general manager back in Philadelphia, Phil Bogle, he got a job with the NFL in the league office. So that general manager position was open for the Philadelphia Soul. And I learned so much on the business side through him, through Phil Bogle, as well as getting hands-on experience when I went to Albany. And I ended up getting an interview. You know, I interviewed with Jaws. The interview went well, and they offered me the position to become the general manager with the Philadelphia Soul.
Now, you're the general manager in 2019. 2019 is the end of the AFL.
Correct.
Could you see it? Could you feel it? Could you?
I had no idea.
Really?
I had no idea. I mean, Aaron, it's crazy because 2019, I go in, I don't know anything about being a general manager, learning everything on the fly, and literally I was in charge of everything, football operations to partnerships. So I had to bring in food deals for our team. Still, they already had the housing deal in place, so I was still working out ways to be able to get a couple more apartments for guys and hotel. I had to work out deals with the hotels and, you know, pretty much doing everything possible, ordering equipment, you know, scheduling facility time for our practice and our training camp, recruiting players, signing players, and negotiating contracts.
Wow.
You know, because at the time it was that was the first year it became salary cap because it was a new collective bargaining agreement. So I'm negotiating their contracts and I'm getting them signed. I'm finding players, and I still, throughout the year, I had to bring more players in to try out for the guys just in case anybody goes down. And it was kind of funny because a lot of the guys on the team were guys that I played with still. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I had to let guys know that they weren't going to be able to play with us, guys that I played with, you know? Guys, my roommate, I had to tell, you know, and, which was, it was difficult, you know, but at the same time, they understood that it was the business. And, you know, that year it was a good year. It was a trying year because we didn't have the caliber of players that we normally had, you know, but because of who our coach was, you know, and because of, you know, we had our weapon and our quarterback, the best quarterback out there, we were able to continue to keep winning, you know, and teaching the young guys, because we had a very young team. Out of 24 guys, we probably had about 12 guys that were rookies, you know, guys playing that in pivotal games, you know, and we still went to the championship that year, you know. So we go to the championship 2019 and we play who else? Albany Empire. You know, I was just there last year, so it's
basically
like,
just
playing
chess against yourself at this point.
You know, it's crazy, but unfortunately, we didn't win that game. But for me, coming into the next year, I was like, okay, I know exactly what I got to do, and I found some good pieces too throughout the off season. I was recruiting guys, I was looking for more guys, and I found some good pieces to where I was just like, yeah, we know how we're gonna build this team now, you know. And then the ball drops.
How were you told?
It was kind of crazy because somebody else called me from, it was Coach Moss. from Albany called me. He said, "Hey, did you hear anything about the league?" Not. I'm like, "No, I didn't hear anything." And then literally about 30 minutes later, I got a call from our chief operating officer, and he told me what was going on. And
you know, just,
the league ceased operations and get your stuff, and that was it.
Now, the brand of the Soul, do they still exist?
You know, that's a great question. I think the league itself owned the brand.
That was a little confusing. I did stumble across that because I thought, and I was going to ask you, but I didn't know how to word it. I thought they like started taking control of some of the struggling teams and other teams. I didn't know how that worked. And so when they were defunct, I assumed then, yeah, they probably owned some of those right. names. Interesting.
Yeah, the league owns all the names and all the rights to those names. And once they went bankrupt, pretty much they filed Chapter 7, so they had to sell all the assets. I'd love to see the Arena Football League come back. I mean, it's a great game. It is an awesome game, man. I mean, there's nothing like it. There's other leagues out there that play.
And that's the other thing is there is IFL and NAL, which I usually cited as the two biggest. And so, I mean, on the one hand, it's weird because it does feel like the end of an era. But on the other, it's like the IFL is out there like, why is it the end of an era? We're here. And, you know.
Yeah, it's funny you said that because essentially the IFL is the biggest indoor football league there is right now. And
yes.
They have teams all over the place throughout the country, mostly the South and the Midwest and the West Coast and, you know, in the North a little bit. However, they play a totally different style of indoor football than the Arena Football League does. Two different games. I always compare it to Canadian football indoors because you can have multiple guys go in motion and you have a true running back. However, the NAL was more comparable to the Arena Football League where you have one high motion and you have a fullback who is your running back that has to step up into the A gap and block a Mac linebacker coming to blitz.
So the NAL was more similar to AFL than IFL?
Correct. However, the NAL did not have the returning nets. So their kickoffs were just sputtered on the ground.
That was patented, though, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Okay, because that came up. That did come up. I don't know. Jeez, I've done too many of these. I don't remember which one. But at one point, that came up, that was patented. So, you know, on a broad sense of sports or football, there is indoor football.
Yes.
There are two thriving leagues, although I really hope this whole situation doesn't ruin any of that. But there are two thriving leagues for sure. But it is weird. It is still the end of AFL. And for some reason, it does feel like the end of an era significantly.
I definitely think it is.
I think part of that, and maybe you can attest to that, is because at the AFL at its height, it was ridiculous. We did an interview with JoJo Polk, who played with the Rampage, and he was telling us some of his stories because he was there in the 2009s and 10s and with Clint when he was playing. And he was talking
that's
about
the height of it.
Yeah. Some of his stories were just ridiculous. And he said that. He's like, this was ridiculous. And it was the height of it.
During that time, and it's funny because around that time was when I used to go to games. I remember going to Arena Bowl when it was in Las Vegas when I was here at UNLV playing in the game.
Really?
And my buddy I grew up with, his dad was commissioner, David Baker. And, you know, he came out to Vegas and we went to one of the games here or to the Arena Bowl game out here. And again, I didn't know too much about arena football just from going to the games, but you could see how electric it was in there. The guys were getting paid way more money at the time too. And at the same time, you know, when it comes down to it, there's a lot of guys that played and were in the front office of the league at the time that got opportunities in the NFL. Because I believe there might have been a couple teams that were owned by, like the Dallas Desperados was owned by Jerry Jones. And I want to say Colorado Crush was owned by John Elway, you know, so a lot of NFL guys that own teams.
Okay. All right. Bo, is there anything that you think now being a scout and all your experiences playing both outdoors and indoors, anything young athletes need to know about opportunities to play football?
Well, I'd say if you want to continue to play football, keep going. Don't let anybody stop you. And just understand every single time you step on that football field, somebody's evaluating you, and you have to put your best foot forward, you know, within the confines of the scheme of what you're supposed to be doing.
And the fact that you basically every, specifically every football player has said that, anyone listening who plays football, I would probably start taking that to heart. That all of our guests that play football continue to say, somebody's watching you always.
You know, I think the biggest, one of the biggest things I got from Dante Stallworth, right? He was in Cleveland with me. And I told this to people. I told this to my teammates. I told this to everybody. Your film is your resume, plain and simple.
Yeah.
Your film is your resume. So what's your resume going to say about you as a football player?
Absolutely. Good note to end on, Bo. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it, man. You took a lot of time. Thank you so much.
No problem, man. Enjoyed it. Have a good one.
You too. All right, I don't have a whole lot else to say here to close up. I do want to say, I think if you listen to the whole interview, you probably understand why I started the show by doing the whole, it's just business, it's a numbers game, that whole shtick in the beginning, because Bo talked about how that was what he heard time and time and time again. And I know a lot of you athletes listening have, you know, you've been through the grind and you continue to get that over and over and over and over and again. And I think you've learned from Bo's story and a lot of our other ones that we've had in the past that just because you hear it's a numbers game or it's just a business or we got to go a different way, none of those things say it's time to hang it up. That's a decision that you need to make in the end. And hopefully with Globally Ballin', you've learned that there are more opportunities than you had potentially thought in the beginning. So that's our goal, at least. And then finally, in addition, I've always been interested in kind of how we view this idea of it being an end of an era when it comes to the AFL. I know there are some massive AFL fans that listen and some that do not care one bit about arena football. And so I want to hear from you. For you, is it the end of an era? Does it seem like something's over and something that will never come back? Or do you take that other perspective and say, well, you know, everybody, it's fine. I mean, we have the IFL, we have the NAL, we have some other leagues. It's whatever. The AFL's gone. Big deal. I just want to hear from you. What was it like? What kind of memories do you have of arena football? If you do remember it in its height, if that was you, if you remember that, you'll want to go check out our episode with JoJo Polk. I mentioned it during this, but JoJo played for the Grand Rapids Rampage, among a few other teams. But he talked about his time playing in the Arena Football League during the height. And so, yeah, that's episode 15, going way back. But episode 15, JoJo Polk talks about that. So you can check that out. In addition, though, we do have some other ones. If you're interested in kind of the indoor football vibe, we've had a few other ones that look at that. And I think the two best are another old one, so I apologize if it seems really old. It's because it is. That's episode 14, Kevin Wesniak of the Jacksonville Sharks in the National Arena League. And then episode 17, Baylen Trujillo and his story as he played in the National Arena League as well with the Orlando Predators. There are a few other guys in here. I know Shaq Wallen, episode 32, talks about his time playing indoor football. And then, of course, obviously, J.J. Raderink, episode 36. I'm just kind of looking through to make sure I didn't miss any of them. But yeah, so that's the whole thing. I want to hear what you think. The ending of AFL, do you care? Do you not care? Did you see this coming? Do you say, doesn't matter, even if I loved it, because we have the IFL and the NAL? Or do you say, no, it is different now. It is the end of something, perhaps an era, whatever it is. So let us know what you think. Just send us a message, whatever. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you again to our guest this episode, Bo Bell. Hey everybody, thank you again for getting through another episode. We really appreciate it. I just want to quick redirect you to where you can find us one more time to kind of close out this whole episode. You can find us at facebook.com/globallyballin, Twitter @globallyballin, Instagram @globallyballinofficial. The name was taken. And patreon.com/globallyballin. Again, what you can find there is all of these episodes music-free as well as ad-free, and a bunch of other tiers that offer you a lot of other stuff. There is a ton of content available for you that you are not getting here
that's out there on the Patreon page. So if you want to check that out, that would be great. And then, of course, again, if you like the show, we would really appreciate a rating and a review wherever you listen. I know I normally suggest Apple Podcasts, but if there's a way, you know, if you listen to it somewhere else and there's a way to rate it, that would be great as well. But any of that is very, very helpful and very much appreciated. It does take a lot of work putting these things together and editing them up and making it all mesh together and getting our interviews lined up and all this. So it takes a lot, but we really believe in it, and we encourage you, if you believe in it too, doing one of those things to help us out would be fantastic. Otherwise, simply you listening to our episodes coming out is a huge blessing to us. So thank you very much for supporting the show, and you'll get an episode from us here in the coming days.